search process for WPFW's next general manager is underway. Successful management searches begin by having conversations with stakeholders to clarify and document expectations for future management. Therefore, WPFW's local station board is inviting all stakeholders to participate in our online survey. Go to WPFWFM.org and press the link to complete the survey. The survey closes April 3rd, 2024. Only one survey per person. Thank you. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get that.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every first Tuesday of the month, live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl on historic U Street in downtown Washington, D.C. As usual, we always bring you an interesting show, and we have two interesting guests for this morning. But before we open up with our guests, we always start with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey, here's something that should be going on all across the country. New York Bill would offer $2,600 to inmates for support after leaving prison. A new bill up in Albany would give people leaving prison around $2,600 to help them to get on their feet. Samara Hayter with the Center for Employment Opportunities, which is backing the bill, says that an initiative like this has shown it can cut down on recidivism and reduce crime by almost 30%. It just helped them give a little breathing room and allow them to focus on their job search, reacclimation to the community. And so we think that will really help an individual reentry to home from prison. But right now, there are no limitations on how or where the $2,600 can be spent. Two other states around the country is doing the same thing. Giving a man $30, $40 after 50 years in prison is a sham. It's juggy boogie. All states should look at giving returning citizens, a $2,000-$3,000 cash allowance to help them ease their transition back into society. This bill is something we'll stay on top of and keep you informed as it happens. New York City's mayor gets baptized in jail by Reverend Al Sharpton on Good Friday. Mayor Eric Adams marked Good Friday by receiving a jailhouse baptism from the Reverend Al Sharpton, joining in on a religious rite with a group of men incarcerated at the troubled Rikers Island complex. The ceremony came as part of a visit to the jail complex where Mayor Adams was scheduled to meet with detainees on a Christian holiday. Having been arrested and then elected mayor, I reminded these young men that where you are now is not who you are. And for the first time in their lives, the mayor didn't look down on them. Images from the event provided by the mayor's office appear to show Adams, the mayor, interlocking hands with Sharpton during the prayer. And the Reverend Al Sharpton was washing Mayor Adams' feet and Adams being baptized. Texas dropped plans to execute man with intellectual disabilities, defying a Supreme Court ruling. Georgia went through with a similar execution last week. On Wednesday, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals resentenced 64-year-old Randall Mays from capital punishment to life in prison without parole. After a state expert agreed that Mays' intellectual disabilities made his execution unacceptable. In 2019, the judge halted the state's plan to execute Mays, who was sentenced to death in 2008 for the killing of two sheriff's deputies, following concerns about his understanding of his action. The evidence of Randall's intellectual disability is overwhelming. He has a 63 IQ. His intellectual deficits have been seen and observed by others throughout his life, from childhood to military service and throughout his adulthood. Investigation revealed U.S. police keep majority of body camera footage from the public, despite taxpayers spending millions of dollars to outfit police officers across the country with body-worn cameras, an effort sold as the key to transparency and accountability in policing. A recent survey shows that when civilians die at the hands of police, the public usually never sees the entire footage. Of the 101 deaths by police that occurred in 131 law enforcement agencies in 34 states in June 22, a time frame chosen because enough time had elapsed that investigations could reasonably be expected to have concluded. Authorities or victims' family had released the body cam footage of only 33 incidents. Withholding body-worn camera footage from the public has become so entrenched in some cities that even pleas from victims' families don't seem or serve to shake the video loose. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Thank you for joining us. This morning, our distinguished co-host, Nikechi Taifa, will not be joining us. She's, as usual, that Nikechi is like the ever-ready battery. She's all over the place. We are so proud of this young lady. Whenever you call her, she might be in the country, out of the country, but whatever she's doing the Lord's work and the people's work. So I want to thank you, Nikechi. And our guest this morning, for the first hour, is Amy Ralston Povall, founder of Can Do Foundation. Amy served time herself inside the institution, and she's a filmmaker and activist. Someone's been concerned, and she's been out in the street for about 17 years or 19. She's calling in from California or Arizona this morning. And our topic for this morning is women serving life sentences. And Amy Ralston Povall has been on the front, one of the ladies who's been on the front line fighting and advocating for them young ladies who've got life 30, 40, 50, or 100 some years inside of them. And these are all mothers and grandmothers. So Amy Povall, are you there, Amy? She's having difficulty plugging in, so we'll just keep on rapping until Amy joins us. What we wanted to do was to discuss the women who are serving life sentences. You remember a few years ago, we had Alice Marie Johnson on before Trump pardoned her. That was in 2018, I believe, or 2019. And she called in from the prison that she was in, and she'd been in 20-some years and was serving life for a drug conviction. Nobody lost their life, and she did 20-some years inside of institution. So Alice Marie Johnson has been on the show. And in fact, she was on about 4 months before President Trump pardoned her. And since that time, this lady has been all over the country and around the world speaking on behalf of those ladies left behind inside of institutions. And we need folks like Amy Povall to make sure that we can help those ladies, because we got quite a few mothers, wives, sisters, and grandmothers incarcerated doing 30, 40, 50 years. And I just want to run a list down of several women that we know in Washington, D.C., who are doing phenomenal and possible sentences. One is Rosalind Bowman, 36 years. Takiyah Neely, 30 years. Benita Jacks, 120 years. Frances Lyles, 45 years. Carmelita Metz, life. Connie Smith, life. Gloria Dunn, 51 years. Tanya Bell, 25 years. Carlise Hall, 55 years. Angela Hernandez, 40 years. Cedrice Alvin, 35 years, and Angela O'Brien, life. We wanted to talk about the show this morning about young ladies who are serving life. And a lot of these women have been in 10, 15, 20 years or more. And it should be some kind of a relief. Now, I see we have our guest who just came on the screen. Good morning, Amy Povall. Are you there?
Yes. So sorry. We have bad Wi-Fi.
Oh, no, sorry. Never be sorry for something you had nothing to do with. Lady, you are here. Thank you for being here. We just mentioned that you've been out for 19 years and you are a writer, a filmmaker, an activist. You're all over the place. You've been working for the last 15 or 20 years, helping those ladies who got these impossible, crazy, long sentences. And I just read a list about 10 young ladies from D.C., Amy, some of whom that you know. And I know 2-3 times a year you come to Washington, D.C., in front of the White House with the Can Do Foundation. You and Nikichi, Andrea James, and ladies all over the country. I am so proud of you, Nikichi, Angela, LaShawna, Elbridge Bay, Thompson. You ladies have been on the front line. One of the things we found out, Amy, that usually when a woman goes to jail and they get released, it's a stigma connected to it. So most women don't let folks know they've been incarcerated or out. And that's one of the reasons why I think we don't have as much help or resources directed to ladies, because a lot of ladies come out and they go back and resume their life and don't want nobody to know, the kids to know that they've been incarcerated. But you are one of the few people who I know who stand up, Angela James, and not afraid of making sure that it doesn't matter where you've been, it's what you're doing now that's important. Good morning, Amy Povall.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, you beat me to it, lady. How you doing? Where are you calling from, Amy, this morning?
Arkansas. I moved from California to Arkansas because California's just gone a little bit nuts. It's so expensive and everything is going up. And I grew up in Arkansas, and right now I'm overlooking the Ouachita National Mountains and have a beautiful view. And I'm back to my roots, and I really love it here.
Can you explain to our listening audience what Can Do Foundation is all about? How do you start it, and what's the purpose of Can Do Foundation?
Sure. Well, back in the 90s, there really wasn't a lot of tolerance for anyone who was arrested for drugs, because we were in the absolute heart of the Reagan-Bush administration that had resurrected Nixon's drug war. A lot of people like to say this is Nixon's drug war. This isn't anything like Nixon's drug war, because they weren't using the conspiracy statute to ensnare wives and girlfriends. They weren't sending pot prisoners to prison for life. This was put on steroids thanks to mandatory minimums, the expansion of the conspiracy law, and zero tolerance war, not just war on drugs, but war on crime. And my home was busted into in 1989. I was living in Los Angeles. And back then, there was like 10 people who were raiding my home. And I went to the ACLU. I went to, you know, try to talk to attorneys. And most people told me they almost didn't believe me, because this was unleashed like Pandora's box onto society. And in 88, 89, that was sort of when it just, everything kind of went nuts. And so those of us who were on the front line who were getting hit, it was almost like we didn't know what was happening, because they were telling women in particular that you had to cooperate or you were looking at 20 to life. Wow. Just like Kimba, just like Michelle, some of the other women that we're going to talk about in just a minute. So I would not cooperate. So they took them 2 years. They indicted me, took me to Waco, Texas. My estranged husband got involved in MDMA, but I didn't care. I was,
what is MDMA?
Like, you just put a gun to my head and put me out. I couldn't.
Well,
take
what is
it.
MBA?
So I got 24 years and went to Dublin.
They gave you 24 years?
Hmm?
They gave you 24 years?
24 years and 5 months, just like Kimba got. Mm-hmm.
And how much did you serve?
Yeah.
How much time did you serve?
Okay, so I served 9 years, but I was kind of at the forefront of, I was my own activist. I made a war room in my cell. I put a big calendar up. I wrote to Congress people. And when Glamour magazine focused on my story, it drew a lot of attention because back then nobody was talking about these types of cases where the wife or the girlfriend gets all the time and the ringleader cuts a deal like my ex, and he got 3 years probation for snitching everybody out. And that was kind of the crux of the story.
You got 24 years and he got three.
Three probation.
Ain't that something? Yeah. And he was a ringleader.
A lot of people who cooperated. A lot of people who cooperated got no time. The major importers and stuff. Anyway, long story short, I became friends. You know, I knew Kimba there. I became very close friends with Danielle Metz, Josephine Ledesma, Angie Jenkins. We were in the law library a lot. And when my roommate was Lao Chin Chin, she got 17 and a half years for merely passing a message to her boyfriend to meet some guy in Chicago at a certain time at a certain hotel. And because she passed a message on what she didn't know was an undercover informant, she got 17 and a half years. And I read her PSI. We were bunkies. And they didn't even, usually they'll pad the PSI and make you look a lot more, you know, involved. But they even said, well, she really had nothing to do with it except for this one message. And so I wrote her clemency petition when we were bunkies. I got out July 7th of 2000. Clinton still had another 6 or 7 months to go in his administration. And I went really hard because two senators from Arkansas read the Glamour magazine article and they advocated for me and eventually took my case straight to Clinton. And I got her in there. I also got her some media and she walked out on Clinton's last day. So, And I was able to tell my roommate, my ex-roommate, that she got it. Nobody had told her yet. So that's what keeps us going. And I thought I had the magic formula to bring other women home. But instead, George Bush became president instead of Al Gore. I was going to try to use some of my resources and connections that I had during the Clinton administration. And it was a long haul before Obama finally made clemency a household word. And that kind of catapulted CANDU because we were the only nonprofit in the nation that our mission statement was clemency for all nonviolent drug offenders. That's what CANDU stands for.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
Say that again. CANDU
stands for? And Danielle is home. Clemency for all nonviolent drug offenders. I'm so happy that the women I focused on that I was friends with, they're all home now that were in Dublin. I'm not saying I did it. It took a village. But Danielle Metz is home and Angela Jenkins is home. Josephine Ledesma, who was serving life, she's home. And Michelle West is at Dublin, where I served my time. And it's just very, very sad that she is still in there after 27 years.
Yeah, we've been calling
life, and I know.
We are so disappointed. We thought after Johnson, this lady Johnson, after Alice Johnson got her pardon, we thought sure that Michelle West, she was in like 24, 25 years. We met her daughter, some of her family members. And we've been working on her case for the past 6-7 years, and she hasn't gotten a relief. You mentioned Dublin. You did your time at Dublin. We just saw in the paper yesterday, or a couple of days ago, Amy, that the former warden of Dublin, in Dublin female prison in California, got 6 years for sexual abuse. And just a few days ago, the 7th correctional officer from that same prison in California, Dublin, got 60 years. He was in court crying, and some of the ladies that he sexually abused was in the court at sentencing. And they looked at this correction officer who was waiting to be sentenced, and he started crying. And one of the ladies in the courtroom said, "Why are you crying now? We cried for years, and you didn't listen to out there." And this is one of the I am amazed to see so many correction officers and former wardens and executives of corrections being arrested, tried, sentenced, and convicted. During my time period coming through, that never, never, ever happened to see a warden or a guard be penalized for the work they for what they did to us inside. And as you said, Dublin is called club rape, and there's been so much going on in this female prison over there, and they got quite a few ladies over there who are being abused, have been abused, and been filing cases. So hopefully, I don't know if this was going on when you was there. Did you see any of this when you was in Dublin, Amy?
100%. About the biggest scandal ever at FCI, in the Bureau of Prison, excuse me, was when our segregated housing unit was full. Uh-huh. So they started putting some of the women over at the holding facility. These were people who were waiting to go to trial. So it was mostly men. Yeah. And they put about five women over there, and there was a corrupt guard, and he was popping the doors open so the men could rape the men prisoners could rape the women. Mm-hmm. Amnesty International did a big article on it. And, you know, Amnesty International, we always used to reach out to them, and they would always kind of just like, it wasn't big enough. It wasn't, you know, because they're nationwide. I mean, excuse me, they're worldwide. They had a tendency to think that the U.S. had some of the best prisons and wouldn't really focus on conditions, and kind of frustrated some of us. But when that happened, Amnesty International did a really big thing on it. The women, it's hard to sue the Bureau of Prisons, but there's a friend of mine, Robin, was one of the women who was repeatedly raped, and she got a settlement. But that was heinous, just heinous. So there's been a terrible pattern of abuse in Dublin, but typically for it to rise, I think the one warden got time, and recently another warden was walked off. And I communicate with one of the women who brought the class action suit, and she's having to endure harassment, and so are some other women if they speak out, and that's really sad.
And it hasn't gotten no better, has it?
I don't know why they can't get, I don't understand why Director Peters can't get a handle on this and send memos out to the BOP staff that this will not be tolerated, including harassment.
Well, I'm sad that it's happening, but I'm also glad on the other sense, because I've been dealing with corrections for 55 years, and I know that it's hard to get a correction officer or the warden or the deputy warden in court, no matter what they do to you or to guys and women inside of the institution. So to see this movement coming down, that seven correction officers and a former warden had been tried, convicted, and sentenced, it's a new day in corrections from this particular perspective. Amy, we had a friend who just passed away.
Wait, before we move forward, did you know, hold on. Did you know that this is the first time ever, possibly in the history of the Bureau of Prisons, that institution has gone into receivership? It's controlled now by the courts. They literally took control of FCI Dublin.
It's in receivership right now. So the Bureau of Prisons no longer have operational control over FCI Dublin?
Apparently, unless something has changed in the last few days. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, there's an article about it.
So what does that mean? If the state took over federal...
They call it a master, a something master.
Yeah, they appoint a court master. Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this. I mean, anyway, I know quite a few ladies. We talked a few years ago when Alice Johnson got her pardon. And we met Alice through you to bring her on our radio show. And it's, since then, I was amazed to find so many women serving life sentences have been in 20, 25, 30 years. And you standing right there working on these ladies with the trying to get clemency or commutation, executive clemency for these ladies. Why is it that you think that so many women now are serving life for nonviolent drug offenses? They didn't kill anybody, but yet they're serving life. What's your take on this?
Yeah. And, well, we went crazy with the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Why
is it so many women are serving life in prison for nonviolent drug offenses? Yeah. Go ahead. You got it, Amy.
Well, I can't really call it good news, but some good news is most of the lifers that were on our site, nearly every one of them are home, including a woman that was serving 9 life sentences.
Nine life sentences? Release. You and, say 9 life sentences?
Yeah.
For what? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was she serving?
And,
so
progress through advocacy. Oh, it was just nonviolent drug offense. And I don't want to veer into her story, but it started falling apart because there were some really bad lies that were told in uh-huh. her pre-sentence report. And now that her prosecutor is no longer involved, and he wrote a support letter for her. But to stay on point, 2 women we're going to talk about today, Michelle West and Roberta Bell, are both serving life. And what attracted me to Michelle's case was that we had a similar component. I was serving time for my ex-husband, and he was free. In fact, he got married while we'd,
Say that again. I missed that. Say that again. our connection is kind of choppy.
I know. I'm sorry. My Wi-Fi internet is a little weak. I found out while I was in prison that he had married an attorney, but we had not officially become divorced yet, even though I had sent him divorce papers and he never filled them out. But I don't want to make this so much about me. The point is, what attracted me to Michelle's story is that there was a guy in the case who murdered somebody, but he never served a day, not one day.
Wow.
He's the one who got the deal. He's the one who snitched on everybody. And he's somebody's neighbor right now. He's living his free life. And so when I heard that about Michelle's story, I really identified with her because my ex, you know, went on with his life and he was the main, you know, the so-called kingpin, if you will. And I really have a problem that Michelle's time is based on this murder that she had nothing to do with. And that's what the conspiracy law does. It makes, if you go to trial and you won't cooperate, they say you're guilty for everything that other people did, whether you knew them or not. And I bet if you went and talked to people on the street and said, did you know that you can go to prison for what this person over here that you don't even know has done? Most people would say, no, that's impossible. So we really haven't we've tried to educate, but unless you've been touched by this personally, most people just have no clue that you can be held responsible for the actions of somebody else. And I'd like to say Kimba has a film out, and Kimba decided to make Michelle West a character in her film. So she's gone all over the media. She was on MSNBC with Joy Reid, and it's an impact film. So she talks about Michelle every time she has an opportunity in front of the media because she's trying so hard to shine a light on Michelle's case.
Yes.
Yeah, the film is wonderful.
You know, they're showing Kimball's film this weekend in Washington, D.C. There's a National Returning Citizens Conference that's being held on April 5th and 6th here in Arlington, Virginia, over in Washington, D.C. And it's showing Kimball's Kimball Smith's film. She's been on the show a couple of times, and I'm impressed with her. I mean, you, Kimball, Michelle, and all these folks, Angela James, Nikichi, to see, for the past 10, 15 years, our paths have been crossing. And it's amazing to see folks continue to do this work. Let me ask you this, Amy. A good friend of mine died, and I forgot her name. She got a pardon when Obama pardoned a group of them, and we all went to lunch in Washington, D.C. She was a big, tall sister. I think she had life, and she did like 21 or 22 years.
Oh, Ramona Brandt.
Ramona Brandt. Oh, Ramona. Did you know about her case?
I know. We miss her so much. Yes.
Did she have life?
She had life, and I was able to get Casey Tolan, who was there was a publication, it was real popular, called Fusion. They've since been named Splinter, but back then, when Ramona was being held in the Brooklyn holding facility, because Danbury sent the lifers when they were renovating, and they said they weren't at a level to keep the lifers. So Michelle West, Ramona Brandt, and some others were put in the Brooklyn holding facility. And just by the grace of God, and I'm going to tell you, God's finger is in the middle of this, and you know it when you see it. And I didn't have very many connects back then with the media, but somebody introduced me to Casey Tolan. And I was going really hard. And I said, Casey, I said, you know, I really need you to do an article on the pardon attorney and how, you know, there was back then a little discussion about there being a little bit of inappropriate behavior by some previous pardon attorneys. And I could tell he wasn't biting and he was sort of trying to get off the call. And I said, Casey, will you please focus on one of my women? I said, please, you know, I need some exposure on some of the stories on my website. And he said, he paused and he said, if you have somebody who's in New York and I can interview some of their family members in New York, I'll consider it. Well, what are the odds? Because the Brooklyn holding facility never used to house people who'd already been sentenced. And Ramona was the only person who fit that category. So Casey lived only a few blocks. And he said, I never even knew I walked by the Brooklyn holding facility all these years. He went and visited with her. And then later he wrote to me and he said, I can't believe nobody's ever done her story, because he got all the domestic violence records and that the guy that she was living with beat her brother so bad he was hospitalized and a little bit paralyzed. And Ramona told her family, because he threatened to kill her family, he said, let me just go back to him, I'll live with him. And Neil Eggleston, who was Obama's White House counsel, read that article, because I was there in DC when he walked up to her, and he said, I read that article, and he said it was so powerful. And they filmed her when she came out. Casey Tolan was there and filmed her walking out when she hugged all of her family members. I love Ramona and I miss her dearly.
Yeah, I got to be friends with her when she got a pardon from Obama. We all went to lunch in Washington, D.C. This is WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. If you wish to call in and participate in this discussion with Amy Povall, the founder of Can Do Foundation, we're talking about women serving life sentences. The phone number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. When I mentioned Ramona, I felt her pain when I met her, Amy. I mean, when you do these long 20, 30, 40-year bits, there's a look in your eye and there's a vibe that you give off. And when I met her, Alice Johnson, Miss Phyllis Hardy, when you meet all these women who did 10, 20, 30 years inside of institutions, and you can look and see the look in their eyes and you can see the pain has been suppressed. But if you've been through it, you can feel it and you can sense it. So Ramona and I got to be buddies. We sit down at lunch and we had a nice conversation. And it hurt me because I didn't know women got this kind of time. A lot of folks find this hard to believe, Amy, that it's easy to believe if you could commit a murder, you can get life. But we got women serving life and didn't commit no murders. And they're serving life sentences and with no hope of ever getting out unless somebody like you or Nkechi will file a clemency petition or an application on their behalf. So I'm curious to see how other people interpret what it is that we're talking about. Secondly, why are you doing this, Amy? I mean, you've been in prison. You did not, 9 years and you came out. Why are you still being involved with this prison rights issue? Why?
Sometimes I ask myself that same question, but it's my passion, and I made countless promises to God that if he would show me favor, I would do everything I could to try to help other people in the situation that I was in. And I'm really trying to live up to that promise. I think I actually have. I will say this, there's days when I'm really burned out, because after Obama and a lot of people on our website came off, over 50 women and a lot of men came off the CanDo website that we were advocating for. Well, that created a flood of mail, and people just naturally assumed I'm a funded organization. I'm not. I've never taken a salary. I have volunteers. And it's hard. I've been called names when I won't take somebody's case, you know, bad names. But I'm like, look, I'm not like the ACLU or some of these other organizations. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm one person. But I couldn't even open all the mail. I got boxes of mail. And
I know.
Yeah. Even now, I am going to fly to DC 2 times in 1 week, and that's hard. I'm going to be honored by Just Leadership USA at their Freedom Ball. And then Andrea James is having a march, a rally in DC.
Yeah, later this month.
4 days later.
Yeah,
April 24th.
Okay.
And
we'll
so
see you.
I want to be there, and she's asked me to speak.
Well, we'll be there. We'll see you when you come to Washington. If you come to D.C., you better give us a call, Amy. I'll bite your ears off.
Don't worry. Are you going to be at the march? If you're going to be at the march,
we'll be there. What would you say to people listening who got a son? I mean, who got a daughter, a wife, or a sister in prison that doing life or been in a long, long time? What can be done to get these ladies out? What can the people in the street who got a loved one or a female or mother, grandmother in prison, what can be done to get these ladies out for these nonviolent offenses, who are serving life sentences for nonviolent offenses? What can be done, Amy? What can anybody that's listening say?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we've tried everything. We have change.org petitions on everybody. If you go to our website and you go to prisoners, there's a drop down menu and it says top 25 women deserving clemency. I need to move that around because some of them have come home, and you'll see that some of them have come home. But the ones that haven't come home, I need to move them up to the top. We also have pop prisoners and men deserving clemency. But to micro focus on women, like you've said, you know, all these women, they need to make phone calls. They need to speak to their family members. They need to speak to their advocates and attorneys. And one thing that people don't understand is that all costs money. And if somebody wanted to put a few dollars, even $10, $15, $20 on their books, it really helps them. You have to even pay for core links. If they send an email to me, that costs money. They got to go to commissary. They got to buy a decent toothbrush, because the one that the institution gives you, the bristles flatten out in 2 days. I mean, they're pathetic. I don't think people realize that you have to buy tennis shoes. You have to buy a sweatsuit. You have to buy everything. If you want coffee, instant coffee or whatever, you have to buy all that on commissary. Other than that, we have change.org petitions on people. They can sign them. I have talked with the pardon attorney. I speak with her regularly. And she said, when you do a clemency petition, go ahead and put in court their clemency. We will take note of it. It's not going to be the deciding factor to bring them home. But sometimes maybe someone might just want to be a pen pal, or they might want to be what we refer to as a guardian angel that just wants to help advocate for that person. And Michelle has a lot of advocates, but we've got Roberta Bell, and her case, just real quick, she was acquitted at the state level, and then the feds picked it up. And there is an attorney that Roberta worked for who wrote a beautiful letter and said, if any person in a position of authority, an adult, had focused on Roberta when she was in school, she was pregnant at the age of 14 or 15, and reported it, her life could have gone a completely different direction, because she was in a horrible family environment that was abusing her. And she was asked to drive somewhere, and she didn't know what was going to happen. And somebody did get killed, but again, she had nothing to do with it. And those are really hard cases, because presidents don't want, you know, when they see that there was violence, even if it wasn't by the hand or even known to that woman, they all tell us, oh, we want nonviolent. And we're like, but they didn't engage in any violence. We can prove it. And, but they're all a little, you know, weird around that kind of, you know, Danielle Metz had that situation, but Kevin Polite, who was the U.S. attorney for Louisiana, he wrote a letter, and that was instrumental in Obama freeing her, because Kevin Polite said she is not a threat to society in his letter, and that she had nothing to do with the murder.
You know, we have a young lady here in Washington, D.C. named Benita Jack. She's been sentenced to 120 years. And she's been in for a while. We got Frances Lyle. She's been in 45. Carmelita Metz, life. Connie Smith, life. Angela O'Brien, life. And the list can go on and on and on. And these women are just sitting in prison, just wasting away. And your whole life is taken away. I received a presidential clemency, and I had violence in my record. It was a murder involved. And that, but it was the time, the attitude was different. The atmosphere was different. And then the atmosphere is lock them up, throw away the key, and irregardless, nobody is showing compassion or concern for these ladies. And when you see these women, it just destroys you. They don't have to open up their mouth to say a word. For some reason, Amy, and I think you understand this, when you do a long time inside a prison, you can sense and feel the other person's pain, hopelessness, and desperation. Even if they don't say it, you can feel it. And when you see so many women who are alive, but yet they're dead inside, because there's no hope. How can you get hope when you got 120 years, or you've been in 30 years, and you got another 40 to 50 to go, and nobody is listening, nobody cares, and your life is just going down the tube? That's why I raise the question, what can we do out here? You're doing a tremendous job with Can Do Foundation, but we need to do something else on to expand on what you're doing. If I don't know if Biden coming in is going to do it, because these guys, like you said, because of violence and the drugs and this kind of foolishness, they don't want to touch it for political reasons. But we're talking about humanitarian reasons. Humanitarian reasons are more important or valuable than the political. And our women and kids are being subjected to this. And I know that something got to be done. If we can get some of the stars, because what's the guy that got the pardon? Kim Kardashian worked on a couple of people's cases. And you need a high-profile celebrity to bring your case. And I was fortunate enough that we had Senator Ed Brooke from Boston, Massachusetts, who took my case and ran it all the way through the system to help get me out on a presidential clemency. So what can we do? I know I want to do something. At my age now, Amy, I'm tired. I'm burnt out. I don't have much energy left, but I want to do something to help these ladies. Is there something that our listeners can do? You said a few things, writing letters, make phone calls, doing, but we need to do something a lot bigger, because a lot of these ladies ain't going to be able to make it or last with all this juggy boogie with Biden and Trump, who's coming in, who ain't coming in. Lives are being lost. Kids are missing their mothers and their grandparents. So I'm asking our listeners, if you want to call in with a suggestion or a recommendation, 202-588-0893. Let's get our women out of there. Let's get our moms back. This is National Women's Month. Our mothers should be home. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, there's two wonderful films out right now, and Danielle Metz has a documentary called Commuted, and I think it's really important for people to support the women who have worked so hard to, because Danielle had a director and a producer out of New Orleans that wanted to do a documentary on her. This is like 5 years in the making, and it's out now. And she even honored me by coming to my home when I was caring for my ill mother and interviewed me. So there's a little section about me and my advocacy and Danielle's story. But Danielle, the director who shaped Danielle's story, does exactly what you're trying to convey. He showed the pain. She got triple life. Showed her family.
She got triple life for what?
Her sister literally moved from... She got triple life just for being the girlfriend of a drug dealer in New Orleans.
Ooh.
And that film is out now. It's,
and what's the film
it's
called?
Commuted. And
Commuted.
Commuted. Yeah, she was just on Al Sharpton, and she was on PBS, her film team. I went to the screening in New Orleans about 5 months ago. And we really need to pump those films. You should have her come on to talk about it because she's
we'll
on
be
the
glad to
right
have
now
on.
Talking to media.
Give us the information. Yeah. We'd be glad
she's
to
also,
have on.
Yeah, she's also the kind of the leader of the council's clemency program because they tapped Danielle to be sort of the poster child of their clemency movement. So Danielle is, of course, going to be in D.C., so will I. And Danielle and I are very close.
When would
close.
That be,
and
Amy?
That film, April 24th.
April 24th.
I'm going to be there. Yeah. The 24th is...
Is that the Andrea James event that's coming up later this month? Is that Andrea James event that's coming
yes.
up later this month?
Yes,
we'll
is.
Be there. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. A lot of people are coming. A lot of other organizations, they're raising money for people to take buses and to come. So I think it's going to be a big turnout.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
But I'd like to, one other person we agreed that we would talk about that I'd like to plug a little bit is Laz or Daz. And
is who?
Laz is 65.
Yeah, I saw a picture. Yes.
She's, yeah, and she's a Cuban immigrant. She came over on the boat back during the what was it? Was it the Reagan Bush administration? No, it was before that. And she can't be deported to Cuba. And she has done 25 years. She's 65 years old.
Wow.
She's a wonderful soul. Jan Schneiderman was her bunkie and was a former attorney. And Jan did her clemency petition, and it's pending. And we just want Biden, you know, the last time Biden did some clemencies was last April because it was Second Chance Month. And it's April now. And
yes.
The pardon attorney is doing an event in D.C. April 12th. And we're keeping our fingers crossed that in keeping with the spirit of Second Chance Month, that Biden might do some this month. We don't know because they never will say, but he granted a commuted 11 sentences, all men last April.
Yeah.
We want some women. I mean, come on. Women are usually in, a lot of women are in behind a man, but not very many men are in prison behind a woman.
Yes.
There may be a few exceptions. So we really want to see some women on his list.
Go ahead.
Women who are listening. It sounds so unbelievable, but we are the soft target. Women have to be aware. Don't follow that guy. You know, he may have money offering you, even when looking at Kimba's movie, you know, showering you with gifts, money. Don't fall for it because you are not love. That is not love.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And we also don't seem to know how to get ourselves out of it because there's a lot of manipulation. I went through the same thing. My husband, I tried to leave him several times and he would beg, I'll change. He was also somewhat abusive with alcoholism and kept a lot of things secret. And I would drive home to my family. I literally moved to LA to get away from him because we're too young to understand the manipulation tactics that are going on. We haven't been exposed to that. And our hearts, women are caregivers. Our hearts are tender and soft. So yes. we want to believe what they're saying. And that's where I think even in school, high school, learning like certain kind of behavioral, like psychology type things would be good for young people because we have a tendency to not listen to our parents. But there's a lot of wisdom with our elder.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, this is very interesting, Amy. I mean, there's a lot of ladies that we wanted to talk about, but I'm really hung up on that Michelle West because I thought when Alice Marie Johnson got her pardon from Trump, that Michelle West had to been in the pipeline. She had to been in the pipeline. She's been in 27 to 28 years. We met her daughter, beautiful. Her daughter was a little kid, an infant, a toddler when she went in. Okay. And she won her mother. And when you see these kind of stories, it just rips your heart out and you want to do something. So the things that we're talking about, writing letters, making phone calls and contact people, I'm trying to look for something a little bit more active. We got to do something because if we're just doing this the way we're doing it, we write letters, we call, we ask somebody else to intercede on our behalf to help this person out, and it just drags on and on, and the light in the person's eye begins to go out. The hope begins to fade. You know what I mean? And you see all this jiggy boogie, you know. We need to do something. We got a program going on in Washington, D.C., and we shared with you and Angie and them. We've been meeting, Andre, with organizations, about 35 or 40 organizations all over the city, trying to bring everybody together to utilize the expertise and experience of people who've been incarcerated to see if we can fight these problems about carjacking, the robbery, the retail thefts, etc. But beyond that, very few people are working, focusing on bringing our women home. You know, you were doing it. Andrea,
well, that's
doing
what
it
this march is about.
When is the march? Give us some background on the march.
April 24th. And if you go to the council website, I should put it up on my website too. It will give all the instructions on, you know, there's hotels. People have to get there and join. They can join with some of these other organizations that are raising money, that whether it's buses or whatever that are going. Uh-huh. But I'll just say this about Michelle, because I want to get this in there. You know, I was part of the informal committee with the Trump administration, but I was a little bit marginalized, even though I was providing the clemency petitions. And I finally broke rank. And I did something that is normally very frowned upon because there's a pecking order. But when we got close to the end of the Trump administration, I had Jared Kushner's email. I wasn't supposed to email him personally, but I would sometimes be on a chain where I could see his staff. And he was the one who was over decisions on clemencies. Although Alice had a big voice as well. So I went ahead and I sent an email directly to Jared Kushner outlining Michelle's case. And I wanted to know whether he had, whether he knew all the nuances of her case and how unjust it was. And I said, please, if you have any questions, because I really didn't know who was being strongly advocated for and who wasn't, because I wasn't like able to speak about the cases that I had personally put together. So I sent an email directly to Jared, and I was pushing as hard as I could. But sometimes there's just, I will say this, at the very end, some people were on the list to come home, and the White House counsel became very aggressive and tried to talk Trump out of granting hardly any clemencies. And they were saying some horrible things that weren't even true. One guy was on there, his name, well, I'm not going to say his name. And three people that the Washington Post were even told were coming home got pulled at the very last second. And Ivanka had already gotten the family members' phone numbers to call them and tell them that your loved one is coming home. And some DOJ or White House counsel convinced Trump that no, these people are dangerous. Don't grant. And he sometimes I was told that sometimes he would listen to what they said and he'd still sign it. And other times he would set the case aside based on what White House counsel was telling him.
So, okay. The website for Andrea James, April 24th, March. What is the website?
Oh, the council. Hold on just a second right here. You have to go to.
In the next week or two, we doing Andrea. Our time is up, Amy. It just went so fast. I want to say thank you. Thank you. Our hat is off to you, Amy, for what you're doing to assist these ladies who are going through this unjust incarceration. Sure, you hold people accountable, but this is excessive and extreme to hold mothers and grandmothers this long inside of an institution.
Kill anybody.
Yeah. So we need more people like you, Amy, and you'll be coming back. We'll see you when you come to Washington. In fact, we're doing a whole one-hour show with Andrea when they come in town with Nikichi. So this is a vehicle to keep our stories out in the public's eye. So use Crossroads, my wife and I, and we're here to be available to put whatever we can do to help shed light and keep people informed and in tune on the injustices that's happening, in particular to our women, our mothers and grandmothers and women. I want to say thank you, Amy Povall, the founder of Can Do Foundation. We'll be in touch. And lady, I am so proud of you. You make my hair grow, Amy. See, then I ain't got no hair, but you make it grow.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm sorry for the little glitch at the beginning.
But it's okay. Lady, you
thank
made
you
it.
So
and we
much.
Got the- And we got the message out, and thank you. And I'll see you when you. We'll see you when you come to Washington in a couple of weeks. And you better come back to the station because we can have you right back on. Thank you, Amy Povall, the founder of Can Do Foundation, and keep on working to bring our ladies on.
And I'm going to connect you with Danielle Metz about her.
Beautiful.
Film.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you. All right. And that's been Crossroads for this morning. Stay tuned for our second hour. This is a 2-hour show, the first Tuesday of each month. So stay tuned for our second show. We'll be dealing with the Maryland New Juvenile Crime Act bill that was just passed. So stay tuned. We'll come right back with you. And our guest will be Natasha D'Artagnan.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
Vote for me and I'll set you free.
Rap on, brother, rap on.
Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation. Control the sound of soul, shooting rockets to the moon, kids growing up too soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
So, round and round we go, where the world's headed, nobody knows.